it's the greatest job of my life, and I think it will always be the greatest job of my life. I can't ever imagine anything topping playing Ron Weasley in Harry Potter. It's been an absolute joy to do it, and I can't wait to get back doing it again. I love it. That's brilliant. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. I was just saying, I'm a bit of a weird super fan for Harry Potter, and we've established that Tom was actually in the theatre production when I saw it, so we're on to a good start.
Absolutely. I'm glad you got to see me, but whoever you saw would have been brilliant.
Yeah, very true. Very diplomatic answer. Love that.
Thank you very much.
How do you feel about the big game last night?
Well, I have to admit, I've got an absolute raging hangover. I really have probably the worst hangover that I've had in about 10 years. I watched the game in a pub, which in itself was just a novelty. Being allowed to go and watch football in a pub was just amazing. So, you know, and then to go and, you know, beat the Germans we celebrated hard afterwards. So yes, I am on top of the world.
I'm glad I get to share your hangover with you. Brilliant. They get worse as you get older as well, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Is that why I got a text at 12:30 saying, are we still doing recording at 10 a.m?
It was. There was a little bit of apprehension there. Are we still recording at 10? But no, it's fine. I've had my coffee, I've had a bacon sandwich,
You're fine.
I am thrilled at the result. And
do you know what? I'm not a big football fan, but I can appreciate, you know, the Euros and the World Cup. But like the feminist in me wants to like football just out of almost like a protest. But I just find it really hard to get into it. So firstly, how are things? I mean, it's been a bit of a turbulent year. So your industry's been hit really hard. So how have you been doing?
Yeah, it has been hit really, really hard, actually. And it's been a really tough year for an awful lot of people in our industry, on stage and off, and an awful lot of people have fallen through the gaps of any sort of government help and have really struggled to, you know, financially and mentally, as have a lot of people. You know, it's been tough for everyone. But our industry seems to have been kind of left behind quite a bit, which is frustrating.
It's tough, isn't it? It must be really sad as well when you've got up and down with, is the show going to be back on? Are restrictions going to be lifted? You know, have you been doing stuff online at all? Or have you just had a break?
Yeah, I've done a couple of radio plays. And when filming restarted, I've done little bits of telly and commercials and stuff, which has been a real godsend. But you know, it's a little bit scary because it's you know when you have the security of a long contract, it's quite rare in theatre or in our industry. It's rare as an actor to have a long contract that you can rely on, but when you do, and you're in a show like Harry Potter, and then wallop, you know, this thing comes from nowhere and the whole of the West End shuts down, and it's kind of frustrating to walk past the theatre to walk past all the theatres, really, you know, around Soho, and just see them all dark. And a lot of the time it felt like the world around it had started to move on. You know, you had people sitting out in the streets, and all of the restaurants had kind of pedestrianised the whole of old Compton Street to make it, you know. And it's brilliant. The atmosphere out there is fantastic. But it's also gut-wrenching to see all of these hundreds of people all sat together outside our theatres that aren't allowed to reopen.
It's not
been easy.
No, it's been really tough. And actually, I've interviewed quite a few different performers over lockdown. I think it was actually, in a strange way, it was a good opportunity to connect with people because there wasn't much else we could do. You know, we could virtually kind of have a chat. But everybody's been hit really hard. And also, I don't know about you, you must feel like this when you start to go back. It's going to be quite strange to go back into that environment and get that confidence back in being around people. But that electric atmosphere that you get in the theatre, there's nothing like it. You could do all these online things, but you must be just raring to go.
Completely. And, you know, there's a certain, you know, I'm a little bit apprehensive about how that's all going to work, and how the audience is going to feel all being together in an enclosed space, and if that's going to feel different. But I genuinely believe that there is there will be a huge clamour for theatre when it's allowed to reopen to its full capacity. I think from speaking to people, you've got your hardcore theatre fans that go all the time anyway, but I think it's really touched a lot of people that perhaps only went every now and then, and it's made them realise how much they miss theatre and how theatre is important to them. And I think there's going to be a massive explosion of audience when theatres are allowed to reopen fully. And I think it's going to be a really exciting time actually for theatre when it can reopen. When it can reopen without having to have restrictions, I think it's going to explode, and I think it's going to be really exciting. And I think that very first night when we go back into to do Cursed Child is possibly going to be one of the greatest nights we will spend on stage, I think. I really believe that, and I think it might be quite emotional when we all take that curtain call for the first time.
That's so nice to hear, though. And the fact that you're really, you know, you really already have that opinion of what it's going to be like shows how much it means to you and how important theatre is to so many people. And we will get into Cursed Child soon because I could talk about it for ages. But I'm glad you're doing all right. I mean, I guess that some of the pluses are we've all been at home a little bit more. We've got to spend more time with our families, things like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. On Cursed Child in particular, because we did two shows Saturday, two shows Sunday. So my children's weekend, I was at work for the whole time, so I hadn't really spent weekends with my children, let alone a year and a half with them for an awful long time.
Who are you?
Who are you? Absolutely. So that's been really lovely. It's been really great.
Do you live in Essex?
I do. I live in Leon Sea, which is on the way to Southend.
I actually
so
went
we were
there the
really
other day.
Lucky. Did you really?
Yeah, it was nice and sunny because I live in like Hornchurch, Upminster.
Oh, that's where I grew up.
Oh, well, there you go. Lovely jubbly.
Yes, from
Took
the
a
same
little...
neck of the woods.
Yeah, I'm not actually from here, but I've recently moved here kind of last couple of years, but most of it's been in lockdown, to be fair. So I was like, there's a beach. Leon Sea has a beach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've had, it's been a very popular place during lockdown. As soon as people were allowed to travel, it's like, get me to the sea. So it's come down. But we've been so lucky living where we live. You know, and being able to, you know, just stroll down to the seaside, and there's an awful lot of people that have been, you know, trapped. I've got an awful lot of friends that live in central London, and well, funnily enough, they were the very people that as soon as they were allowed to travel were like, can we come and visit you for the day, please? We need to get out of London. So yeah, we've had lots of visitors. So I started off as one of those kind of annoying child actors who used to pop up on telly every now and then. I got an agent when I was quite young, I did a play when I was 11 at the Queen's Theatre in Hornchurch, which I'm sure you know.
Lovely, yeah,
it's just round the corner from you. So I did a play called 15 Streets, which is a Catherine Cookson novel, and I did that when I was 11 years old. And got the bug, and then kind of used to pop up as young reprobates in London's Burning and The Bill and things like that. And
The Bill, love
and
it.
Really loved it. Oh, yes, absolutely. So absolutely loved it. And then decided that that's what I wanted to do. So I went off to drama school when I was 18 to do a degree, and then came out and got an agent, and that's where it kind of all kicked off, and I did it full time as a professional, and I've been really lucky, and there is unfortunately an awful lot of luck involved in it, and there were people in my year at college who I consider far better actors and singers than I am that it just hasn't worked out for some reason, you know, and they've had to give it all up, which is really sad because they were and are absolutely brilliant. So I've been very lucky to have been able to make a career out of it and to do a job that I love, which is quite rare for people, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's really nice your honesty there about, you know, there is a lot of luck involved, because there's so many talented people out there as well who, you know, it might be their dream and they just never make it. But I think it's definitely testament to all the hard work that you've had to put in, and it's a difficult industry, you know, it really is.
It is, yeah. Yeah, and there is a lot of hard work to put in, and when I say there's an awful lot of luck involved, There is, but it doesn't usually just fall in the laps of people. They do have to work hard for it. But I suppose what I mean is talent-wise, that sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to why some people work and some people don't. And it's, there's an awful lot of hard work and an awful lot of knocks that you have to take. And as I say, I've been very lucky.
Yeah. And what's your kind of favourite? Is it theatre? Is it TV? Because obviously I've seen that you've been in a few different musicals as well. And are you a singer?
I do sing. Yeah, I've been. Yeah I do sing. I love watching musicals. I'm a big musical fan. And I'm not ashamed to say it at all.
Good. Proud.
I don't know. It's a tough one. I definitely prefer theatre to television. I couldn't tell you whether I prefer musicals or plays, to be honest. I've been really lucky enough to do both. And there are positives of both, really. There's nothing quite like, for example, I was in Les Mis for a while. And
who did you play?
I played Grantaire, who's the drunk one of the students who sings Drink With Me and things like that. It was quite cast.
Was that you last night?
Completely. I was very much Grantaire last night. And it's a show I'd always wanted to be in. And I think the buzz that I got from singing the last note of Act One with the whole cast, where we're all on stage on that revolve, I think that's possibly the greatest buzz I've ever had on stage. And it didn't matter whether I was ill, whether I'd had a bad day. There was something about that it would give you that same unbelievable rush every night. Yeah. And it's you don't get as much of that when you're in a play. You don't get those moments as such from plays. But then I also love the intimacy that you get with an audience from a play. You know, when you've really kind of when they're really engrossed in what they're watching.
Yeah, they're really in the moment.
There's nothing quite. Yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing quite like those silences when I've forgotten my words. There's nothing quite like those silences where you can hear a pin drop, where, you know, you really know the audience are there with you. And that's really quite exciting as well. So definitely I prefer theatre to television, but I couldn't decide between musicals or plays, to be honest.
Yeah, hopefully no silence when there's meant to be an applause, usually, but...
No, but yeah, absolutely, that would be embarrassing. I was in Dirty Dancing, and my voice cracked on the last note I had to sing in the Still of the Night. And it was this really, really sort of quiet moment in the show, and then it was quite a big sing, so you have to, like, sing Do You Love Me and all these big... hitter songs, and then right almost towards the end of the show in Act Two, that you then have to sing this really beautiful soft song with lots of falsetto in it. And and one night my voice just went nope, and I went to do the last note, and what I can only describe as a kind of like a pigeon noise came out of my mouth. And I think the whole audience, there were 2,000 people in the audience, and the whole band cut out anyway for that moment. And you just sing that a cappella, that very last note, and then the lights go down. And usually you'd get a really lovely applause. That night, it was just deathly silent because I think the whole audience just went, what just happened to him?
Was that meant to happen?
Exactly, yeah. And that was one of the low points, actually. I can laugh about it now, but I got horrific stage fright after that night.
Did you? And thought
it was going to happen every single night. And subsequently, the rest of the year that I was doing that show, I was a bit of a mess because I got in such a state about it. But, you know, I can laugh about it now.
Yeah, you learnt from it. And you've probably just stunned the audience. Maybe you were incredible. And they were like, is this an avant-garde play? Like, what just happened? I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah. Do you know what's fascinating when you say stage fright? You never think about kind of theatre actors or West End performers getting stage fright, but it must be quite a common thing, actually.
Oh, my God. It's so common. And some of the biggest names as well, you know, I've spoken to have got horrific stage fright. It's really crippling, actually, when it happens. And it it can be sparked off at any point in your career. You know, as I say, it could be just one night something happens, or you know, and then it can turn into panic attacks, or you know, it's really, really horrible. I think I read that Judi Dench really struggles with it as well. I could be wrong, but I've heard that she does.
Yeah, if Judy's got it, we'll feel good about ourselves.
Exactly. Absolutely. We're okay. Yeah.
Right. We've got to get into the big stuff. The elephant in the room, or the wizard in the room, whatever you want to call it. I am a huge fan of Harry Potter, and most of my friends know that. I need to hear everything. I need to know what the process of getting the role was like. How is it being in the show? Do you know J.K. Rowling? Are you best mates with Rupert Grint? Like, I need to know all of it.
First of all, it's the greatest job of my life, and I think it will always be the greatest job of my life. I can't ever imagine anything topping being playing Ron Weasley in Harry Potter. I can't really imagine anything kind of living up to that. So that's the first thing I will say, is that it's been an absolute joy to do it, and I can't wait to get back doing it again.
Is it October?
It is October, and I think an announcement is imminent that it's going to be October. I hope I'm not jumping the gun there, but as far as I know, it's going to be October. So I cannot wait to get back to it, and I think to get back rehearsing it as well, and be back with all that wonderful cast, and we've got a great camaraderie between us, and we've all spoken and zoomed and seen each other when we've been allowed to over lockdown. We're a really tight bunch, so yeah, can't wait to get back to it. I was in Les Mis at the time when and very much loving being in Les Mis, and had kind of thought, right, I love this show, I've wanted to be in it forever, I'm gonna stay in this show for as long as they'll have me. And then the call came in to audition them. They were auditioning for the second year of Cursed Child. So the first year had been a huge success with the original cast, and they were now looking to, they were 6 months in, so they started auditioning very early to replace the original cast, because the original cast were going over to Broadway. So yeah, I went in, I got the audition. I wasn't a huge Harry Potter fan, only because I'd
Interview
never
over.
Really... and it wasn't that I'd read Harry Potter or watched Harry Potter and didn't like it. It was just I'd never got into
it,
really.
Yeah,
absolutely. And my wife, however, is a massive Harry Potter fan, so she was really helpful in the audition to kind of fill in the gaps when I was sort of saying, "What does this mean? And what's that? And what's a Horcrux?" And
I bet she loved that. I bet she was like, "You have to do this."
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So there is, had three rounds of auditions, and Joe or JK has the, all of the casting decisions has to go through her for her to sign off. So that was nice to know that I got her seal of approval. Then, then I got the job, and then had the task of frantically cramming, you know, seven books, and So then I became, and by Azkaban, I was hooked, and I was a massive Harry Potter fan myself, because Azkaban, I really clicked with it and went, okay, this is great.
And I think it gets darker, doesn't it? Because of my age, I think we actually watched the films a lot in my house before I read the books. And I think as they got darker, and as you get older, you think this is incredible. But the first few ones, I think you've got to power through them, haven't you, if you can't connect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you read it as an adult or as a teenager, even, I think those first two books you struggle with. I think it's absolutely genius that the books grow up with the reader. And I think I'm so jealous of anyone who gets to start reading Philosopher's Stone when they're 11 years old, because what a way to kind of grow up and read a new book every year, as you know, and when you go into second year, they go into second year, and you grow up with the readers. And as you say, it gets darker and more, and the themes are more adult as the books go on, because I think it was designed to grow up with the reader. And I think that's absolutely genius. And I'm so jealous of any child that gets to start the books at the same age as Harry and Ron and Hermione and everyone in those first books.
We tried with my little brother, but he was terrified. I mean, it is quite creepy, a lot of it. I sometimes wonder what the next thing is that I can sort of read from the start where I feel connected immediately.
I wonder if anything, you know, will ever come about like that again. Mm. You know, that I suppose we've through the ages, you know, we've had fantasy series novels, with Tolkien and people like that, but the enormity of this world that Joe created, I think it's incredible. I think anyone who can do that, and it is endless, you know, we've seen with the offshoots of Fantastic Beasts and things like that, the world is endless, you know. It's just incredible. So
and clever. everybody knows it in the whole world, which is very rare. It's very rare.
Yeah.
Right, so I've got a few questions about the show itself. So I've obviously seen it, and we've established you were in it.
Brilliant.
And one thing that I thought was incredible was the artistry in terms of, I don't want to do any spoilers if people haven't seen it, but it felt like real magic. A lot of the kind of stunts that were done and the puppetry and everything. Was there a lot of choreography that you had to get your head around in order to adapt?
Very much so, yeah. There's an awful lot. It's probably the one time where too many cooks don't spoil the broth, because we really do have we have a director of movement who is so influential on the show. We have a director of magic, Jamie Harrison, who's also I think he's now one of the directors on Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So he's a director in his own right as well, as is Stephen Hoggett, the movement director. And then the lighting designer. And all of the lighting is so integral to making the magic work. And then, of course, you've got the genius, it's John Tiffany, who directed it. And so there's an awful lot of people that, you know, sprinkling their magic to make the magic work. And it really is down to a lot of things all happening at once. You know, there's, you know, the movement director will make something happen to kind of, I don't want to give too much away. It might just move the audience's focus somewhere else so that we can do something with an incredible piece of lighting and an incredible piece of magic. And then the audience look back to where they were looking and are absolutely wowed. So, there's an awful lot of things that that make it work. But it's very special.
Yeah. And you feel that as soon as you walk in, just that everything about it, the music, the choreography, the staging, everything just felt so authentic. And I think me and my friend, when we went, he was just gripped to my arm the whole time. And he's not even the biggest Harry Potter fan. He'd obviously, after that, he really was. But I think also, if you have been a fan and you've read all the other books, then this is almost like the next movie for everybody that hasn't. Yeah. Been to the theatre show.
Well, it is the next story, and it's and Joe wrote it with Jack Thorne, the amazing Jack Thorne, and John Tiffany. So it is the next story. So yeah, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you'd be missing out not to see it, really, because it's the progression of what happens to them 19 years on and when they're adults. And so as you say, it is like the next film.
Yeah. And I think even if you're not a Harry Potter fan, I think you can really appreciate how incredible it is as a stage show. But I also loved that it was a two-parter, because we did the whole matinee and then evening. I was just raring to get back in. Obviously, I had a few cocktails in between. But I think the two-parter thing, a lot of people are, could I just go see one part? And you're like, no, you have to see both. You cannot see one.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, you couldn't just go and see one. Definitely not. And I think even if you tried to, you'd then be clamouring to get a ticket for part two so you can see what happens. But yeah, I think it's there's a real beauty to spending the entire day with an audience as well. And you kind of go through that story with them, so that by the end of the day, you know, you've all spent the day together, you know, on stage and the audience. And you've lived that story and gone through those highs and those lows with them. And I think there's something really special about that in it being two parts.
Yeah.
That said, they've just announced, and it is quite exciting, they've just announced a one play version that they're going to do in America, which we kind of helped create over here. We did some workshops over here to see how that would work, and it really does work, actually. It's a really exciting one play version. It's one of those you have to really concentrate because it flies by at a pace. The story is still very much the same.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a slightly truncated whiz through exciting version, which is more for the American audiences, I think. So yeah, that's really exciting. So, but I have to say, I absolutely love doing the two part version, and I think there's an awful lot of people who will come to see from all around the world that will come to see it because it is the two part version, and they want to just be engrossed and enveloped by Harry Potter all day long. I think for a lot of people, that's their idea of heaven. So
yeah, it's immersive, isn't it? Well, they obviously come to see you, don't they? That's why they're there.
Yeah. Just me.
You got to take
it's
the
actually
credit.
Called Ron Weasley in The Cursed Child.
Do you know what? There's definitely a group of super fans out there who would watch that.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll make a spin-off.
Yeah. Have your family come to see it, and your kids, do they enjoy Harry Potter?
They do. My daughter in particular is really through lockdown. She started reading the books during lockdown. And she's only, she's seven, she's seven, but she's eight tomorrow. So she's quite young to start reading them. And she absolutely loves them. And she's on Half-Blood Prince already. So I'm so proud of her to have read all of those books at that age. But she's stopped now. She's going to have a little break because it is starting to get a little bit too dark and a little bit adult for an eight-year-old.
Oh, wow, she's eight. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to have a little break from it. And but luckily, she got to see it just before lockdown.
Oh, lovely.
So that was lovely. My little boy hasn't seen it yet, but I'm hoping that he'll get to see it at some point. He's only four, so I don't think we'd get him back to sleep again.
No, for the rest of his life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, bless.
But yeah, they do love it, and they are very proud. It's very sweet. All of their friends know what Daddy does and who Daddy plays, and it's very sweet.
So nice. I've got a couple more Harry Potter questions before we close on another question. But I've actually had some listeners' questions come in because I spoke to a few people who were like, oh, I've got a question. Someone has asked, so Lisa has asked, if you weren't in Gryffindor House, would you be in a different house? Because obviously you've kind of been made to be in Gryffindor, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. I do you know what? I was only having this conversation yesterday, which is quite strange. I would definitely be in Ravenclaw, and I desperately want to be in Ravenclaw.
Ah.
And I definitely think I am a Ravenclaw. But when I went on to the Wizarding World website and was sorted into my house, I definitely was answering the questions with my Ron Weasley hat on, I think. And I think that's why I was put into Gryffindor. But I wasn't made to be in Gryffindor, I have to say. It was genuinely, that's what I was put into on the Wizarding World website,
by the
sorting hat. But yeah, I think when I was answering the questions, there was a part of me that was answering them, you know, with a little nod to Ron. So that's probably why I ended up getting put into Gryffindor, I think. But yeah, I would love to be in Ravenclaw.
Ah, interesting. Okay. And then I've got another question from Rowan. He'd love to know which one's your favourite book and why. I think you've just mentioned it already, though.
Yeah. For me, Prisoner of Azkaban, what I found so exciting, really, really exciting. And it really, that's the moment that I absolutely became a fully pledged Harry Potter fan. For me, it would be Azkaban, yeah.
And are you a fan of the movies or is it just the books?
I am. I love the movies.
Yeah,
I think they're just brilliantly made. And I think they'll be great movies for decades. You know, they'll stand the test of time. And what a cast as well, just to see all of those amazing actors. You know,
I love it. I watch what is it, Something About Movies, you know, the panel show that's and is it Michael? I think it's Michael Sheen, and there's a long-standing joke that he was one of the only British actors not invited to be in the movies. But yeah, you're right, the cast is just incredible,
unbelievable. And Richard Harris, who was Dumbledore in the first two films, he's just one of my favorite actors of all time. I absolutely adore him.
Have you actually met any of the actors? Have they come to see the show?
Yeah, quite a few, actually. They've I think most of them have been in at some point over the time the show's been running. Quite a few came in that first year. But yeah, we got to meet loads of the actors. Bless her, we just before lockdown, was it just before, we got to meet Helen McCrory, which was wonderful. She came to the show with Damien and their children, and that was lovely to meet her. God bless her. And so we've got to meet an awful lot of the cast, and that's been really exciting, really exciting. And I think when they come to see the show, I think you know it doesn't matter how big you are as an actor, I think if you're in something like that, it's a huge part of your life. And I think they really enjoy kind of coming backstage afterwards and kind of sharing their experience with people who understand what it's like to be part of that world, because it is, you know, and it is, there's something about being in Harry Potter and representing those characters that there's a certain pressure to it. And I think that doesn't come with an awful lot of jobs. And I think there's very few actors that ever get to experience that. So I think we kind of tend to have a bit of an affinity when people from the films come to see the show.
Oh, I love that. Well, look, it's been a real pleasure chatting to you about this. I mean, I could ask many questions about Harry Potter all day. But what I was thinking is it might be quite nice to end on, you know, if there's anyone that is listening at the moment that would love to get into theatre, do you have any tips for what they should maybe start with?
Absolutely. And I give this piece of it. I've done a lot of teaching over lockdown, and I kind of have said this to students that are about to go out into the industry, but it sounds like a bit of a depressing piece of advice, but it's so important to be able to do something else as well, because it doesn't matter how successful you are as an actor, there will be times where you're not working. And it's those that have found another vocation, another tool that they can pick up and put down, whether it be teaching, whether it be sound engineering, whether it be gigging, whether it be, you know, find something else as well that you really enjoy doing that you can do in those times, because it's those jobs that allow you to stay in it and not have to give everything up. If you don't have that, you're scratching around thinking, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to pay the mortgage? I can't do this forever. Oh, do you know what? I'll go and get a job in an office and I'll give up. Whereas if you've got something that you can go, okay, I've not got a job at the moment, but I'm going to go back into doing this, and you can find a way to pay the bills, you can find a way to keep yourself afloat until that next job comes in, that's the key to kind of staying afloat in the industry. So it's a really depressing piece of advice.
No, it's a lovely piece of advice, because it's realistic, and I think that's what we all need.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, you know, absolutely 100% go for it, because it is the most wonderful profession, and to find something that you love doing, and even if you don't go into it as a career, you know, if you love performing, just go for it and throw yourself into it, because it's a wonderful world and the people in it are wonderful. And so 100%, if you have any interest in performing, throw yourself in wholeheartedly and enjoy every second of it.
Oh, that's such a nice piece of advice to end on. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you.
Pleasure. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, I've tried to keep my cool, but it was very exciting when Frankie said, I know you. I was like, I'm in. Send me him this way.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'm really pleased we got to chat. Thanks ever so much,
Nadia. Yeah, me too. Right.
Thank you very much. Is it Nadia or Nadia? Have I pronounced your name right?
No, Nadia, you've pronounced it fine. But Nadia, to be honest, when I interview people, I don't really correct anyone, because you're on the show. It's great.
An awful lot of people have taken to calling me Keith recently, because I look quite like Keith Lemon. And it's got to the point where people around where I live, because it's quite a close-knit community, people have heard people calling me Keith. So they actually think my name is Keith.
Oh, my goodness.
I had someone the other day actually call me Keith, not even joking, actually thought my name was Keith, because they've heard someone else shout, Keith. So I've got to the point now, I don't correct people. I just answer to either Tom or Keith.
And that can be your alter ego. Yeah. You know, Keith can do stuff that Tom can't do.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we could swap. Maybe he could be the next Ron.
Yeah. And he can be in Ravenclaw.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, great. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. Nurse the hangover.
Thank you. Thanks, Nadia. You too. Lots of love.